Move to the second case of the day, 05-1003, Racine Charter 1 versus Racine Unified School District. Mr. Lavelle.
May it please the court, my name is Jeff Level. It's my pleasure to represent Racine Charter 1, the appellant before you today in the case entitled Racine Charter 1 versus Racine Unified School District. This case is about Racine Unified School District's refusal to bus charter school students in the city of Racine, even though it buses students from throughout the entire geographic scope of the district, which is essentially east of I-94, through the entire remainder of the county to Lake Michigan.
Now, the state busing law does not cover charter schools. Is that correct?
That is a bit of an issue in the litigation, Your Honor.
I assume, but I mean, it doesn't. They're not specified in this. Am I correct that the busing law was probably passed before there weren't such a thing as charter schools? Is that?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. Section 121.
Well, we can't say that was intentional that they were left out by the legislature. And I gather the legislature has subsequently tried to amend the statute to include them, but the governor vetoed the amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Probably on the basis of cost, I assume.
Maybe
assuming too much.
Divining the governor's intent in the veto is a precarious exercise, but
there
I can.
There were two vetoes, weren't there?
I believe there were. That's correct. And I'm recollecting the bill number was AB 361. Section 121.54 was enacted many years ago. I submit, and it's our position in this case, that the statute as enacted was intended to encompass the universe of students because it referenced public and private students.
But Judge Cuddihy asked about costs. I mean, that's the whole issue here. And Racine Unified School District takes a position that costs is the reason why they're in an economic pinch and they can't afford it.
That certainly is the argument in the brief, Your Honor. We obviously take great issue with that.
In connection with that, have there been discussions between these parties about the marginal cost, the cost of for the Racine school board of taking on these extra students using their regular buses? We got a number in there, which would be the cost of separately busing the charter school, but that doesn't seem very sensible to me if there's a bus system already operating. How much would it increase the cost to the Racine school board to pick up the charter kids?
We certainly agree with that, Your Honor. What was done was a very rough estimate of what it would cost to simply hire buses to bus them separately.
I know, but that isn't a very good basis for the additional cost to the school district that put this busing, is it? I
mean, it's not, Your Honor. In fact,
if you call up and said, I'd like to bus kids from this one school, you're going to get a higher number than if you say we've already got an existing busing system, and how much extra will it cost to pick up these kids, I would assume.
I'm sorry.
Has anybody made that calculation or discussed it?
No, indeed, Your Honor. Ms. Flynn, the transportation director at Unified, testified, and it's part of the record before this court, that it would take her just a little bit of time to make that calculation. Racine Unified uses.
Well, it seems to me that's a pretty obvious calculation to make in this situation. But
she also testified that bus routes, and again, as a part of the record before this court, Unified's bus routes go right past this charter school, which is located in the inner city of Racine in a commercial area, and that it's likely that. and it's likely that seats on that bus would be vacant. And if the program were run to encompass the concept of busing Charter 1 students, that program would work to fill those empty seats. Unified pays for its busing on the basis of...
Well, I don't know that it would be costless. It probably would cost something, but I'm surprised that that number isn't included in the record here. So go ahead.
Well, they don't have the same school year, though, do they?
Well...
And that's a consideration here, that the charter school looks like it's in operation longer hours, 3 weeks during the summer, mandatory.
That was certainly a linchpin of the district court's decision, and it's one issue that I very much want to address today with this court, and that is that assumption is not supported by facts in the record. In fact, just the opposite. The facts in the record show that the district court concluded that this 3-week summer session was a unique feature of the charter school and that it posed, quote, unique additional costs in transporting, close quote, our children, when in fact the testimony in the record before the court and here is that Racine Unified School District has year-round schools. Jane School, this is found at Appendix D, page 47. It buses students all year round to Jane School. RUSD also elects to bus summer school students all over the district, and this is found at Appendix D, page 49. The statute 121.49 does not require Unified to bus its summer school students. Nonetheless, it has elected to do so as a discretionary matter. The fact is that there's nothing at all unique about summertime busing in Racine Unified School District. It does it to its own schools, it does it to Jane School, and it does it to summer schools throughout the district, and RUSD does that now. We take great issue on the state of this record with the district court's conclusion that the three-week summer session was somehow unique and distinguishing the charter school from Racine Unified School's operations.
It is unique in that it's mandatory, isn't it? I mean, none of these other programs are.
Well,
they're all optional, whether you go to summer school or not.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if you attend Jane's School, it's a year-round school, you are obliged to attend it year-round. It has sessions in the summer. True, summer school sessions at other schools in Racine Unified School District are a discretionary with the student, as is busing them discretionary with Unified. But the Jane School is, I believe, the state's first year-round school, and it receives a busing service from Unified, as is required under the statutes.
Now Charter 1 receives $6,900 per student from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, isn't that right? And that kind of funding is not available to any other private, parochial, or charter schools within our USD district, correct, or boundaries?
Again, Your Honor, we do take issue with that on the state of this record. In fact, as our brief has argued, Racine Unified gets DPI payments that are comparable to that figure, and they're mandated by Section 118.2R paren E paren 2. And in our brief, I noticed reading, preparing for today, we omitted that paren E. But the statute, we sometimes refer to as a hold harmless provision, has mandated that Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction make dollar payments to Unified to compensate Unified for every student that no longer attends a Unified school but has attended the charter school in its place. So the fact of DPI payments to the charter school is really not a unique distinguishing factor either. Both of these schools receive substantial money from the Department of Public Instruction on a per capita basis for students to pay for their education. I would also note, as argued in the briefs, that Racine Unified School District enjoys the taxing authority under Wisconsin statute, an authority that the charter school does not have. So the fact that the charter school receives some compensation from the Department of Public Instruction is simply a source of its funding, a source that it must have to survive because it lacks the taxing authority that Unified possesses. I would also note in this funding area that Racine Unified has argued, and the district court in part relied on this as well, that there are monies received from private sources. The S.C. Johnson Fund, for example, provided startup monies for this school, which is located in an older commercial building that had to be renovated in the inner city of Racine. And private funding of a school is nothing at all unique to private schools within the Racine Unified School District that receive busing for their K through 5 kids who face the one of the two twin prerequisites, a hazardous walk to their school or a walk that is more than 1.5 miles to the school.
Now, if this is a class of one case and the parties seem to be treating it as that, how about this requirement of animus, showing of animus? That hasn't ever been addressed here, has it?
Well, Your Honor, in our briefs, we do take somewhat of an issue with the class of one characterization. That was certainly how it was characterized by the district court. We argued and pleaded that the appellants, who are both a school for itself and in a representative capacity, and the students for themselves and representatives of others, are pursuing it as a class in the sense that Unified's policy classifies these students, who numbered 258 at the time of the filing of the complaint, as one group, and purposefully and intentionally singles them out for a denial solely on their status as charter school students without regard to their walk, whether it's lengthy or whether it's hazardous.
Is there a requirement for a showing of animus here? That, I guess, is my question.
No, Your Honor, I submit there's not. Even in the class of one standard, if the court looks to its decisions in the Neville case, for example, and in the Abiero case, this issue of animus has been addressed, and this court has held that what need be proved in a class of one case is intentional discrimination that is intended to single out the individual and to treat them differently, disfavorably, with the intent in mind. In other words, not an act that has a foreseeable consequence that's detrimental to the plaintiff, but rather an act that's intended to be detrimental to the plaintiff. And clearly we have that element here undisputedly. The school district has acted with the intent to deprive them of busing. It has not implemented a policy that has as a foreseeable consequence the effect of denying them busing. I see that my white light's expired, so I will sit.
Okay. Mr. Bertelson.
Have I answered the court's question?
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Gilbert Bertelson, and I represent the Racine Unified School District. I don't know quite why I prepared for this argument, because I find that my argument is taken up with response to what I've heard thus far, and I wish to address some of the points that the court has raised and that Mr. Level has raised as well. First, on the issue of similarly situated, I'd like to point out that the school that Mr. Level represents came into being saying to governmental authorities in an ultimate effort to get $6,900 that we will be on city bus routes, the implication being that we don't need transportation.
Well, let's assume that the school is not equally similarly situated, but how about the students? They're similarly situated, aren't they?
May I respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor? Mr. Level raises that point very well, I think, in his brief. He said we shouldn't be looking at this from the standpoint of the schools, but rather we should be looking at it from the standpoint of the kids. And he raises the point of two kids in the same house assigned to different schools and say, how can you say they are not similarly situated? If we're going to use that standard, use that test, then all kids in the school district are entitled to transportation wherever they want to go. If I had twin boys, one fortunate enough to have been selected to attend Charter 1, and the other boy having been assigned, if you will, to the local elementary school in the Racine Unified School District, I would not consider them similarly situated. One is a school district taking care of 20,000 students and all the problems that brings with it, trying to deal with collective bargaining groups demanding more and more money and having legislative caps on what it can spend. Another, the Charter 1 school, gets the same $6,900, and it has, and I think this is fundamentally important, it has the backing of the S.C. Johnson Fund. It starts with $8.5 million in a fund, a foundation that's committed to make it work.
You sound as if you have some animus against charter schools.
I do not at all. None whatsoever. And on that issue, if I may say, may I point out that we are in Racine, Wisconsin, the school district in which the S.C. Johnson Wax Company is located, one of our two or three major employers, a major national, international corporation that gives wonderfully to the community. Do you really think the school board of our district would want to say no to Johnson Wax if
it
didn't have to?
Well, is this controversy about money? I mean, if you were paid for the service of picking up these kids, would you then have an objection to doing it?
I can't make that determination, but the logic is
objection. I wonder why that hasn't. I assume that's been discussed, but nobody has admitted to it yet. So,
Judge, you make a wonderful point. It has not been discussed between us. Apparently, it was not discussed between the school board and Charter One during the developmental times. It was discussed during mediation in this court, but I cannot reveal those discussions, obviously, because of mediation. Bottom line, it has been discussed. It did not get part of this record somehow, some way, other than for two basic facts. Number one, with fewer students than apparently now are sought to be bused, they came up with a cost of $124,000 per year. Don't think of this as a one-year deal.
Yeah, but
it's forever.
They called up the bus company and they said, well, to do it for you, it costs $126,000, but that certainly isn't what it would necessarily cost the people who already have a bus system operating.
Please don't come to that conclusion too quickly, Judge. Here, let me tell you a couple things about the transportation business. Every bus that's on its way to its first pickup is empty. Every bus in the afternoon that's dropped off its last kid is empty. And people see empty buses everywhere and say there must be space. That doesn't mean there is space. And even if you're on a specified route, it doesn't mean you're going to be able to get one kid from one to another. The record does not disclose that point. I agree with you, Judge, and I wish today it did. But it does not. I can only say this. The rational basis test is not one that says to Bertelsen or the school district, you must prove you have a rational basis. Rather, he must prove that we do not. And if a court can think of a rational basis for our doing what we have done, then our practice must be upheld. Your Honor, I'm sorry. Cost is the issue. Cost is everything here.
Now, you talk about cost. I don't know. I haven't studied everything in the record in this case, but I know there was some discussion in the press about Racine having to either eliminate or severely cut back all its athletic programs.
Yes, sir.
Because of costs.
Yes, sir.
Does the record tell us about the economic pinch that the district is under?
Not about the point you raised. That's all happened since these facts were litigated, Judge. And I can discuss it with you. You are entirely correct. There was a referendum a month ago asking that the district be allowed to spend more money to pay its bills, and the public turned it down. And the school board came back with another referendum that's coming up with next week, asking for, again, a lesser amount, this time $6.5 million of additional spending over and above that which is allowed to be spent by the caps imposed by the legislature. Second point I want to make I point out once again that the trial court made an important issue. These were reasons one and two on the similar situation issue. It said, first of all, you applied for a charter saying we're going to be on local bus lines, and we thereby implication don't need transportation. But then when they got a contract, again, in an effort, I would assume, to get $6,900, they said, we want and we will have the power to contract with other governments to provide the transportation that we need. And you add to that fact a third point that the trial court made, and that is that the director of this new 2R independent charter school went to where other 2R independent schools were, the city of Milwaukee, and found that, in fact, the city attorney for the city of Milwaukee had told the city of Milwaukee school district that it need not transport so-called independent charter school students. This school began recognizing that there was no law in the state of Wisconsin, that the practice had been...
Well, I guess the busing law we discussed was passed long before there were any charter schools, right?
Yes, sir.
So there was not a conscious decision by the legislature to exclude the charter schools. They just
no question
weren't around when the law was passed.
If you look at the whole thing philosophically, Judge, this is what's happened. A new public school has been plopped right in the middle of an existing public school. And the new school is saying to the old school, we want you to pay for our transportation costs. The old school is saying, you got your $6,900. We've got our $6,900. You transport your kids, and we'll transport ours. By the way, the taxing authority these days, as mentioned by Mr. Level, is not a benefit. I would much rather go to the people of Johnson's Wax and ask for more money than go to the people of the city of Racine or the Racine Unified School District and get more money. A much more difficult thing to do. The whole thing has to do with a law that was created, Judge Cudahy, 35 years ago. This district has complied with that law, done its best to comply with that law. We transport kids over 2 miles. We take them through hazardous areas, and if they're private school students, we do the same thing for them. We've chosen one thing. We said for the kids K through 12, ages 5 through 10, you don't have to walk 2 miles. You only have to walk a mile and a half. Beyond that, we transport kids per state law to the students, to the schools where they are assigned. We do not transport the students of other public school districts. Again, there's no other public school district like Charter One. It never existed before 2001. But Kenosha area kids go to Racine schools. Kenosha doesn't bus them, and we don't. And Racine kids elect to go to Kenosha schools and Oak Creek schools and Raymond schools and vice versa. Their districts don't transport them, and we don't either. We think that the trial court analyze this very, very well. We are different. They are different. They are a new creature that came into being, understanding they were not entitled to transportation. They're trying to get it now. Good for them. But they're not entitled to it until the legislature tells us they should.
Is it really right that the charter school students have different cost characteristics? That's essentially what the district court said. They've got higher cost characteristics. That makes them not comparable, isn't that?
Yes, sir. That is right.
That's not correct, though, is it? I mean, if you look at these St. James School or whatever it was. And
the what?
The school district has got problems just like the charter schools, it seemed to me.
I don't know that I wholly understand your question, Judd. I can say this.
Well, I'm asking, why do they have... why are their cost characteristics different or distinguishable from the one system from the other?
You mean the charter school system as opposed to the public school system?
Yeah, right.
In the public school system, students are assigned for the most part, not always, but for the most part geographically. That means that if you can place a student within a mile and a half and not in a hazardous area, that student can walk to school. You have no transportation costs. Mm-hmm. But the district is more than urban. It is rural. I mean, this school was to be urban. That's what it was. Its announcement was. But the Racine district is rural. It covers 150 square miles, farmlands, small corner communities that have names but no incorporation. People that get onto a bus on a farm and go to a school far away. The school district has had desegregation. That happened in the 70s, after these transportation laws were passed, but before charter school laws were passed. And desegregation has caused students to be assigned to schools far away from their homes at time, in the purpose of and for the purpose of desegregation. Mr. Level raises the subject of magnet schools and kids being transported to magnet schools. That is wholly true. They are transported to magnet schools historically because we had the...
Doesn't all that show that their cost characteristics are the same as the charter schools? I don't follow your argument. In other words,
well, I don't... when you say cost characteristics, Judge, I have...
Well, I mean, why does it cost more for some inherent reason to bus charter kids than it does... the other kids, that's all I'm trying to ask.
Well, this is a calculation that has to be made by a woman named Karen Flitt. I can only tell you that it does. The whole issue here for us was that we are not required to do it, therefore we should not be doing it because we can't afford to do it. If they were a private school not getting that $6,900, they would be, I agree with you, wholly similar to some other private schools in the district that have declared themselves to be area-wide attendance areas, meaning they draw their kids from the whole school district. In that sense, you're entirely right.
The legislature tried to amend this busing law to include them, is that?
Yes, sir. Twice. Failed twice.
I guess the governor's got caught money problems, too. So
I think he does, yes. Yes, he does. Well, with that, I'll close unless the court has further questions. I do want you to understand that it's all cost, that it results in the superimposition of a new public school district right smack in the middle of an existing one, and laws that are 35 years old that the district was trying to meet and continues to try to meet, and the district is saying we just can't take on more unless we have more money, and we're having trouble getting that to have football teams. Thank you.
What time? 3 minutes.
Again, may it please the court, and thank you for your attention. I appreciate the opportunity. I will talk fast. I have much to cover. First, the city bus routes. This is addressed in the briefs. It was relied upon by the district court. The undisputed facts before this panel are that Racine Unified School District schools are also on city bus routes. This is found at page 111 of Appendix Item D in Ms. Flynn's testimony. The existence of schools on city bus routes is not unusual nor unique. It doesn't distinguish these students. And we must keep in mind this is a kindergarten through fifth grade school. These are not students who would be taking city bus routes. Clearly, the city bus route reference was something put in the marketing materials that pertain to hiring staff and making the school available to adults or at least older people who might take the bus route, not kindergartners. It's not a rational basis, nor is it a distinguishing factor that makes these students in any way different. Secondly, on the issue of cost, time won't permit me to address everything I would like to address, but I would like to remind that the rational basis test encompasses two words, not just basis, but rational, and it should be looked at in context. As the Supreme Court said in McGowan, a classification is not rational if it rests on grounds wholly irrelevant to the achievement of the government objective. Cost in context here is irrelevant to this situation. Racine Unified elects to transport summer school students at an obvious cost. It doesn't have to do that. It elects to bus students at the 1.5-mile...
Well, if cost isn't the issue, then why would they decline to bus your students?
Well, I think to go to Judge Cudahy's question earlier, there's an inference here on this record of animus. And it's hard to find a witness who could say, we don't like charter schools, but I don't know how else one concludes based on these facts that they are treated differently. And this is dramatized in Ms. James' situation, an appellant here before you. She has a second and a fourth grader who reside at 9th and Villa in the inner city of Racine, who would walk to the charter school but get bussed to the unified school that's just a scant two blocks away because of the unusual hazards in the walks they face. And Racine Unified's Ms. Flynn testified that she recognized, and this is found at page, having a hard time finding the page reference, it's found in the brief, that Racine Unified recognized that the students who attended this charter school simply by virtue of its location would almost all face the same unusual hazard in their walk. They recognized that these students have to walk through a safety hazard that would require them to bus and would by their own policy have them bus if they attended the private Prairie School, a school in part sponsored by S.C. Johnson, or if they went to an Archdiocese of Milwaukee school, a Catholic school system in Racine, or if they went to a public school operated by Racine Unified. And I've heard an oral argument, the charter school referenced as a private school. It's on this state of the record before you, a public school with doors open to all who come.
If your light just went on, but if somebody wanted to attend school in Milwaukee County or Racine County, Racine has no obligation to pay for those transportation costs, do they?
In the main, that's correct. There might be on the fringes some exceptions. There's a 5-mile rule under subsection 2 for private schools, so if there were a private school just across the county line, they may be required to bus there. But in general,
that assertion is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, your time has expired. We will be taking this case under advisement.
Thank you again.
Thank you for the fine presentations by both sides.
Thank you.